All right, we're going to be starting in the Old Testament, continuing through our series in Psalms. We're going to be in Psalm 121 today, which is on page 516 in the Bibles that are out in the chairs if you would like to follow along. Page 516, Psalm 121. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. And then our New Testament reading is going to be in Hebrews chapter 2, verses 5 to 18. And that is going to be on page, what page number is this? 1001 in the Bibles. Hebrews 2, starting at verse 5. Now, it was not to angels that God subjected the world to come, of which we are speaking. It has been testified somewhere, what is man that you are mindful of him, or the son of man that you care for him? You made him for a little while lower than the angels. You have crowned him with glory and honor, putting everything in subjection under his feet. Now, in putting everything in subjection to him, he left nothing outside his control. At present, we do not yet see everything in subjection to him. But we see him who for a little while was made lower than the angels, namely Jesus, crowned with glory and honor because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. For it was fitting that he, for whom and by whom all things exist, in bringing many sons to glory, should make the founder of their salvation perfect through suffering. For he who sanctifies and those who are sanctified all have one source. That is why he is not ashamed to call them brothers, saying, I will tell of your name to my brothers. In the midst of the congregation, I will sing your praise. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children God has given me. Since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver all those who, through fear of death, were subject to lifelong slavery. For surely it is not angels that he helps, but he helps the offspring of Abraham. Therefore he had to be made like his brothers in every respect, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For because he himself has suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. This is the word of the Lord.
All right, good morning. Good to be together again. Thank you, music team, for leading. Fun to have Davis join us this morning. Hopefully you didn't enjoy it too much, as this might be his last Sunday with us. Davis is getting married on Saturday. His fiance is here, so you can complain to her that she's stealing him from us. Just kidding, we're very excited for them. Looking forward to celebrating that next weekend. So as you guys, many of you know, my family is from North Carolina, and so we pretty regularly make road trips down there. It's a long trip, and we kind of have a tradition now that when we cross the border into North Carolina, we always play the anthem of North Carolina. Does anybody know what this is? It's Petey Pablo's Raise Up, so I don't know if you know that song. It's a rap song that celebrates the culture and diversity of North Carolina by instructing the listener to raise up, take their shirt off, and spin it around their head like a helicopter. Not sure it's the best parenting decision we've ever made, but 14 hours into a road trip, you're not really too worried about that. It is usually the type of energy that we need to kind of bring us to the end of our road trip. We usually follow that up by some sort of album that we all enjoy and can kind of lead us through the last couple of hours of a road trip. Sometimes, or regardless of how we do it, our family is probably not, and certainly not, the only family to pass time on a road trip listening to music. Maybe your family's done this, but this pastime actually goes as far back at least as the Psalms. This morning, we're beginning a new kind of genre of psalms called the Psalms of Ascents. These psalms are explicitly identified as psalms of ascents. They're the Psalms 120 to Psalm 134. And we're not exactly sure what this kind of superscription means. It might refer to the way the music was meant to be played. It might also refer to kind of the theme of a spiritual ascent through the psalms. But I also think it's most likely that these psalms were meant to be recited as the Israelites made their annual pilgrimages to Jerusalem, their ascents to Jerusalem. 3 times a year, all the Israelites were supposed to gather back in Jerusalem, no matter where they were living at the time. They'd go back to Jerusalem for various festivals and worship services. So I find it likely that these psalms, at least these psalms, were meant to be recited on that journey. So as we read through this psalm and look at this psalm together, I want you to imagine that it's sung by a family. It might have been sung in kind of a call and response format. You'll notice that the first 2 verses are actually in the first person, and then the rest of the psalm turns to a second person. And so it could be that somebody sang the first 2 verses, and then the rest of the family responded with the last part. This particular psalm is centered around this fundamental question in the first 2 verses. From where does my help come? So as we look at the psalm this morning, I want us to consider 4 kind of questions off of this fundamental question. Who needs help? Where is help found? What does this help cover? And how does this help come? So first, who needs help? The psalm begins, I lift my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? So the psalmist clearly needs help, but why? We've heard, if you've been with us for a while, we went through the Psalms of Lament during the season of Lent, and we heard the psalmist regularly describing distressing situations that they were in, and particular experiences of anxiety and stress in which they were calling to God in. We don't actually get that same context here. It doesn't seem that the psalmist is in a particular moment of weakness or distress. And in fact, if the psalmist is making a pilgrimage, he would be surrounded by family and friends. They'd be heading probably to a feast or a worship service, some sort of celebratory event. And yet it's in this context that the psalmist still recognizes that he needs help. Notice what occasions this kind of recognition. The psalmist lifts their eyes to the hills. So you could consider the psalmist, they're journeying toward Jerusalem, and they're at a particular point in the journey where they're surrounded by other hills, small mountains. And it causes the psalmist to reflect on their own vulnerability. A couple of reasons why the hills would have caused the psalmist to reflect on their vulnerability. First, the hills could have posed threats to travelers. Hills would have been a great place for people to hide, scouts maybe, robbers to hide, and then they could come and attack people on their way, ambush them. There were real physical threats that might have come from the hills. The hills also, just as kind of large topographical features, might have caused the psalmist to reflect on their own smallness and vulnerability. But that's not all. There's also other temptations that might have been symbolized by these hills. The potential threats might have then led the psalmist to consider the potential temptations of the hills. First, the hills could have been a tempting place of refuge, right? They would have been good hiding spots, not only for robbers, but also from robbers, potentially. So the psalmist is considering, I'm tempted to go and hide in these hills, maybe. But actually, even more foundational than that, the hills themselves would have been probably other places of worship. So Jerusalem, Judah itself was a hill that the Israelites went to go worship on because that's what you did on hills. If you wanted to worship, you had to ascend a hill. And so all of these hills could have also been symbolic of other gods, other sources or subjects of worship. So literally and figuratively, the hills would have exposed the traveler's vulnerability, would have reminded the traveler of the threats that they might face on their journey, and then also reminded the traveler of the tempting ways in which they might seek refuge from those threats. So who needs help? The psalmist needs help. Not like the psalmists of the Psalms of Lament, not because they're in some particular moment of distress or attack. The psalmist needs help just because the psalmist is human. And being human is to be vulnerable. Vulnerable to the threats of the world, vulnerable to the tempting false sources of protection from those threats. And so in this way, we're all just like this psalmist. We too are vulnerable creatures. Vulnerable to threats and temptations of this world. And I know that especially us New Englanders, right? We wear it like a badge of honor that we don't need nothing from nobody. And we say it like a silly little joke. But friends, I actually think that this is a demonic lie. For us to tell ourselves that we don't need any help, that we're not vulnerable, would be to deny one of the most fundamental realities of our humanity. Friends, God created humanity to need. Not a flaw, a feature of being human is that we would need. He intended this. He designed this. This is fundamental to who we are. Where do you feel your vulnerability? This is a safe space to allow yourself to feel that vulnerability. I know it doesn't feel safe many places that we are to feel and certainly to name our vulnerability. Where are you feeling vulnerable? Twice this week, I received criticism about my leadership in different areas, well-founded criticism, and I felt vulnerable, afraid that maybe I had been exposed for not being the leader that some people thought that I might be, or I want everyone to believe that I am. Maybe I'm not actually fit to be a good dad or a good pastor or a good friend and neighbor. I felt vulnerable as I was exposed. And I found myself doing what most of us do when we sense our vulnerability is exposed. What do we want to do? We want to run to the hills, right? I didn't want to feel my vulnerability. I didn't want to ask for help. And so I found myself tempted to run to the hills to cover my own vulnerability, to look to other gods to save me, to cover my vulnerability. Friends, I believe that all of our sin is an attempt to cover, to hide, or to ignore our vulnerability. Think about it. Where do you feel sin, sense sin most tangibly in your life? Social media addiction, pornography, judgmentalism, overeating, self-righteousness, drug abuse, overshopping, gossip, overworking, overdrinking, I don't know, I could go on. Where do you feel your sin most tangibly in your life? Every one of these sins is a hill that we're running to try to cover our vulnerability. How do you respond when you receive criticism? How do you respond when you're feeling anxious or afraid? How do you respond when you're asked to do something that you don't want to do or are unsure if you can do? You're feeling your vulnerability exposed and you're tempted to go run to a hill. Both times that I received criticism this week, I felt my vulnerability and I felt my instinct to run to the hills. I'll lash out. I'll criticize them in return, cover up my weakness by exposing theirs. I'll scroll social media, ignore my vulnerability. Let's look at some other people's flaws. Not wanting to think about the fact that maybe I didn't handle this situation the right way. Maybe I needed to be corrected. So what should we do instead? We're all tempted to run to the hills when we feel our vulnerability exposed. But what should we do instead? We ought to embrace our vulnerability. You were created intentionally by design as a feature, not a flaw, to be vulnerable, to be needy. Embrace that and then turn to the one that you were created to receive help from. Point 2, where is help found? See this again in verse 2. My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Our temptation is to go to all these false gods to help us cover our vulnerability. But in doing so, what we're doing is we're passing up the supreme help that's available to us. This is our God who is both personal and powerful. First, the psalmist's help comes from a personal God. Remember, Matt mentioned this last week. I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago. Whenever you see the word Lord in all caps in your Bible, that means it's a specific name for God, which is Yahweh, which is his personal name that he gave to his people, communicating to them that I want to be your God. You are my people. Over and over again throughout this psalm, the psalmist identifies God as his God, my help, my personal help, your keeper, your shade. Friends, the help that we need is from a personal God. This God knows you, such that even if you're able to hide your vulnerability from other people, which, by the way, you're not. You might think you're doing a good job hiding your vulnerability. We all know you're weak. We are too. Even if you can hide it, though, from other people, you cannot hide it from God. Hebrews 4 says, no creature hidden from his sight, but all naked and exposed, vulnerable before the eyes of God. And indeed, this is a scary thing. It makes total sense why we want to run to other gods, right? Because these other gods don't know us personally, right? Alcohol, the image on my screen, the drug, even the work in some ways. They don't know us personally in our vulnerability. They don't make us expose our vulnerability to offer us whatever help they're going to offer us. And yet, because they don't know us personally, they actually aren't equipped to help us. My burn boot camp plug for the day. It's why I love going to an actual in-person gym. My trainers know me. So when they tell me they think that I can do more, I actually believe them. Versus the time that I spent going to basically a virtual gym and the trainer kept telling me I was doing great, but they couldn't even see me. They didn't know me, so they couldn't help me. God knows your vulnerability and your weakness, and he does not despise it. Psalm 103 tells us this. It's what we prayed earlier. We've been talking about throughout. He knows your vulnerability, and it leads him to a compassion for you. He knows your frame. He knows how weak you are. And he loves you like a father loves his child. Nobody despises their child for being weak. A good parent doesn't despise their child for being weak. God does not despise us in our weakness, but he helps us. It leads him to compassion in the midst of it. So our help comes from a personal God who knows us, our unique weakness, our unique needs, our unique vulnerabilities. He knows it, but he's also powerful to help us in it. You can imagine a personal God that's not powerful, a personal God like maybe Genie from Aladdin, or like that has to muster up a little bit of power here and there to try to help you to fight all of the other gods. That's not the God of Christianity. That's not the God that the psalmist goes to for help. The God that the psalmist goes to for help is the one who made heaven and earth. I mean, name me a higher power. He goes to the one who created the 93 billion light years of observable universe, which is filled with 2 trillion galaxies, each galaxy containing hundreds of billions of stars. The God who created all of this knows you, wants to help you. The God who maintains the cosmological constant, sustains the world at such precision that if it changed by one part in 10 to the 120th power, it would either collapse or explode. I don't even know what that means. But the God with the power to maintain the universe, sustain the universe, offers himself to you personally. I really asked myself this week, and I heard Nathan saying this during the time of confession. Like, do I believe this? What are we doing obsessively watching the stock market without talking to God about our financial situation? What are we doing consuming the news and social media instead of coming to God with our fears and our concerns? What am I doing anxiously planning and preparing for every possible outcome of my life without praying? That's the question. That's the question, brother. That's the question. Do we believe it? It's a good question. It's a good question. That's what I'm asking myself. Do we believe it? What are we doing? Talking to ChatGPT, a therapist, a doctor, a friend, a boss, without talking to God. Not to say these things are bad things. They may be resources by which we access the help of God. But they can't replace him as the source from which true help ultimately comes. Our vulnerability is far too big for us to overcome on our own. You need help. I need help. And our help can only truly come from a personal and powerful God, the God of the universe. So next question, what does this help cover? Our family, during one of the big winter storms, we had a leak in our house. And we had to kind of do the math with the algorithm of, like, is this something that we file an insurance claim for, right? Because of our deductible and how our premium would be affected, you have to do the math of, is it worth it to bring this need to the insurance company? Maybe you do the same thing with God. Is this need something that I should talk to God about? Should I bother God with this need? What does God's help cover? Simply put, God's help covers everything all the time. Everything all the time. Verse 7, the Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. All evil really means all evil. You can go read the Hebrew. It's an all-encompassing reality. Moral, physical, spiritual, any type of evil. There's no type of evil that we're not vulnerable to. There's no type of evil that he can't protect us from. Wherever you're feeling your vulnerability, God is your help. Temptations. Verse 3, he will not let your foot be moved. This doesn't mean he won't actually let you trip while you're walking down the sidewalk. But it's talking about if you're walking down what they would call kind of the symbolic path of life, God will not let you be moved. As we take refuge in God, he won't let us go off the path of life. If we slow down and realize, God, I'm being tempted right now. I'm feeling weak. I'm feeling vulnerable. If we can slow down to name that to God, to ask for our help, he comes and he offers us himself, protects us from temptations along the way. He also protects us from the threats that would lead us to falling into those temptations. All different kinds of threats that we're vulnerable to. Physical threats. The Lord is your keeper. He's your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, it says. In the time of the Psalms, this ancient Near Eastern culture, the sun wasn't just like a nuisance. The sun was actually a threat. Massive physical threat. Think about this journey to Jerusalem. They could have died from dehydration or heat stroke. So this would have been a vivid, relevant image for the Israelites about the physical threats that they were facing. The psalmist reminds them that God offers them protection. I know we feel this. Many of us facing physical threats, disease, aging, chronic pain, even financial issues, relational issues, some physical reality that's threatening us, our well-being. We're feeling vulnerable. Who's well-equipped to help you with that? The personal and powerful God of the universe is equipped to help you with that. Mental struggles. It's an interesting one. In verse 6, the sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. When I was reading that this week, I was like, that's a little bit weird. I've gotten sunburned. I've never gotten moonburnt. So why do I need shade to protect me from the moon? There was kind of a saying, I don't know if it was around during this particular time, but this same idea was there of being moonstruck, right? And so when somebody had a mental illness, they thought this person was moonstruck in some ways. And so this means that God can help us not only with our physical threats, but also mental. Anxiety, depression, OCD, social anxiety. All that the person Nathan was naming. Who's well-equipped to help you with those things? The personal and powerful God of the universe. Have you asked him for help? Spiritual realities. The sun and the moon, they weren't just kind of scientific cosmological realities as we think of them today. But when the psalmist was writing, these were gods in and of themselves. They had spiritual power, they thought. And so here the psalmist is saying, God can protect you from these spiritual realities as well. Friends, we are in a spiritual battle. We've been talking about that a lot throughout this psalm series, more than I would have expected. Our enemy is not the person across from us. Ultimately, our enemy is the devil, this evil force behind all nature who also is personal and knows you and is coming for you. This is our greatest vulnerability. How can we be protected? Who is well equipped to help you with that? The personal and powerful God of the universe. Have you asked him for help? God helps us and is able to help us with everything and all the time. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. I asked her if I could share this, but Selah has trouble sleeping. Our middle daughter, she's 9, and part of her anxiety is that she's going to be the last one awake in the house. It's a totally reasonable thing to be afraid of. What if my parents fall asleep and I sleep hard? I'm not helpful at midnight. She should be scared. She goes to Ashley. Not so with God. We actually were talking about this passage on the way in this morning. I said, this is one that you should have by your bed. Maybe you too. When you're struggling to sleep, no one else in your house is awake. You're feeling the threats, the temptations of this world. There is one who is awake, always ready and willing to hear your needs, to offer you his protection and his help. You're never going to wear him out. In fact, in some ways, God created us that he might exercise this muscle. Creatures that need his help, that call on him for help. Like a father, he longs to help us. A good father. Again, different than me. When I woke up at 1 in the morning, I'm not super eager to help. But God is. He's so different from us in that way. You're not going to wear him out. Nothing too big, nothing too small, nothing too much. Keep asking. You will not wear him out. Now, how does this help come? This help comes in the form of God's helping and keeping. First two verses, twice, the psalmist talks about God being his help. This word here, this Hebrew word, carries a lot of weight. It's not like an optional aid, right? Like some of us take vitamins and supplements to help kind of aid our immune system or aid our general health. That's not the help that's being talked about here. This is not optional aid, but essential assistance. This is more like you've lost both of your legs and you need prosthetics. This is the help that God offers us, the essential help that we need. This is not an option. You need it. Some of my friends who believe differently than me have offered some criticism of my faith to say it's just a crutch. To what I respond, exactly, that's what it is. If you have a broken leg, you need a crutch. I tell them, I'm broken. I need a crutch. I need aid. I need God's help. It's the only way that I can walk through each day. Wake up, put on my prosthetic legs, pray for God's help to get me through the day. God helps. God also keeps. 6 times over the course of 5 verses, the psalmist refers to God as our keeper. Another word for this would be guard or protection. So if God's help kind of helps us walk through the valley, God's keeping is protecting us against those threats and temptations that come to us on the way. It's interesting that these two words, help and keep, are the two words that were, the two jobs that were given to Adam and Eve in the garden. Adam was created and God said, now go in the garden and work it and keep it. Guard it. Same exact word. And then he wasn't able to do that on his own, so he created Eve to help him in that task. Help and keep. So again, from the very beginning of time, that was before sin, Adam and Eve were created to help and keep, but the only way they could do that was by drawing on God, the ultimate helper and keeper. Not a design flaw, but a design feature. And the same is true for us today. To do what God has called us and created us to do, the only way we can do it is by his help and his keep. We draw on him to do the work, live the life that he has called us to live. How do we do that? We do it through Jesus Christ. He is the way that we access God's helping and keeping. This is what Hebrews 2 was telling us. It's because of Christ's perfect life, death, resurrection, and ascension that God's help and protection is offered to us. By his Spirit, Christ offers us his help. You see, he lived this life perfectly. And then he ascended into heaven and now sends us his Spirit as we place our faith in him, that he helps us to live this life as we were designed to live it. He helps us on the path. He also keeps us by his Spirit because of his life, death, and resurrection. He's been through it all. He's gone through death and come out the other side. So that means that whatever that we go through, God's protection is offered to us through Christ. I picture Christ himself covering us as the flaming darts of the evil one are assailing us. So that in some mysterious way, as many of us are suffering, I know many of us probably feel like God is asleep at the wheel. Jesus is protecting us in the midst of that so that whatever suffering we're struggling with, whatever sin we're struggling with, God is using it and will bring it to fruition in the resurrection life. It's not the end of the story. As we place our faith in Christ, his help and his guard, his protection, his keeping is offered to us. God's is. And I'll take it one step further as we close out. Friends, Christ's help comes to us through the church and through the world. Consider again that this psalm was likely sung by a family, by a congregation as they went to the temple to call on God's help together. They did it together because God's help and protection, it does come to us miraculously, but I also believe that God has chosen to have his help and his protection come to us through the ordinary means of grace. Through the church. Through pastors and elders and shepherd leaders who you can go to when you're feeling temptations of this world. Go ask for help when you're feeling the threats of this world. When you're feeling the vulnerability, let us cover you. Comes through the good team, our servant leaders who are here to help physically resource you in a time of need where you're walking through the threats of this world. God's help comes to us through doctors and therapists and good medicine and teachers and friends and recreation. All of these good gifts that we ought to draw on that we might receive God's help, resources for us. They're just not replacements for his help. Don't run to the hills. Ask God to protect you in the valley. Let's do that together. Would you pray with me? Here we are, God. All of us in our various expressions of vulnerability. Would you give us the faith to just, like, let our guard down. Take off the armor that we've created for ourselves. Reject the other gods that we've taken refuge in. Walk away from the hills that we're hiding in, whatever that might may be, even potentially good things that we've turned into gods, because maybe they'll help us without exposing our need, our vulnerability. But God, our vulnerability and need is exposed to you right now. I pray that we wouldn't hide from that, but we embrace that reality. That we'd experience your cover, your help, your protection, which is better than anything else this world can offer. Convince us of that by a work of your Spirit, I pray, individually and then together as a community. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.